Musky 360 Records is proud to present Jay Essie's Techno Musky Fishing Hits.
Up in the house, Steve, these are the greatest musky fishing techno hits you've ever heard.
Put your mouth on my big rubber.
Jay, I've got to admit, I can't do this anymore. No one wants to hear musky fishing techno songs. This is pathetic and they suck.
They're not that bad, Steve. Come on, really. And I need the help. I don't want to get into it right now.
We all know it's your freaking gambling addiction.
It's bad. Okay, I admit it's bad. They're banging down the doors. I don't know what to do.
Who can forget the timeless classic, Let the Pike Drop?
Watch me kill these big pike. Party in the gulag, party in the ranger. Watch me kill these big pike.
All right, I quit. I can't do this. Every week you want me to sell my soul and do this because you have a freaking problem. I love you, but you can't take care of it. This is ridiculous, dude. I mean, I've seen it. You've got to, I could call my mom. I could sell my boat. How much do you owe these people? I'm sick of doing this. I don't want you dead, but what is going on, dude?
Well, it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot of money. It's more than I've got. I'm betting on everything, Steve.
I know you. Okay. I can, like I said, I can call favors. I can whatever, get in cash advance on whatever, dude. I'll mortgage the house. I don't want you dead. You got to stop gaming. You got to pay me back. Realistically, what do you look for real? What do you owe these people? We can try to come up with it to the best of our ability.
Okay. Well, it's $47.
Are you fucking kidding me? All this is over $47 fucking dollars.
It's a lot of money. Times are tough, man. Come on.
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast. Jay Bird, $47. Really?
I told you, it's a tough racket when you get caught up in it, Steve.
You know what? Jay sent me his Venmo, and he's square now, Jay.
You're square. We're all taken care of. The pain is over.
They're calling him all day now. It's, hey, sign up for our fantasy pawn hockey league, right? Yep. Do it, we're done, right?
I've been betting it at work about what color will sell out first with Tom, and he's just sick of it.
It just doesn't end. You're freaking betting on, you know.
You name it, man.
Freaking, what will Fred have for lunch? It doesn't end. So
easy.
We're turning a new leaf. We're turning a new leaf. Anyway, yes. Guys, not long till musky season. I'll say this. I said not long till musky season. Open water is there, right? It's like, I got some pictures from a friend in Minnesota. I mean, it's not real icy. Mm-hmm. What do you say, Jay?
We're ice covered here, but yeah, ice fishing is still safe in a lot of lakes, actually. But, you know, hey, we're setting up for an early ice out. So yes, you can look at it, that positive, right?
It's cool. You know, it's a different ball game. I mean, some of the smaller lakes, definitely in the Northwoods, you come up there and get your fat heads. Stick a fat head.
Get some flat heads and some shiners.
Is it fat head or flat head?
They mistakenly call it flat head quite often when people come in, but it's a fat head minnow.
Jay,
yes,
what's your bets on the Super Bowl?
What's my bet on it?
Yeah,
super, you don't want to know.
Not Super Bowl, Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Don't
gamble on it. Have you bet on it yet?
No, I haven't. I'm laying off that one, baby.
Good, $47 well spent. Anyway, guys, finally showed up in between podcasts, a replacement skirts on the Krakens, like we thought.
Yeah, we got them.
You got your big nasty. You got them all. You can get nasty with them. Good friend and listener of the podcast sent me a great pick this week. He was running one in like a really fast river. No weights at all, which is killer. That's the whole point. So kudos to you, my friend. Very shortly, we'll have some other stuff. Jay, we were talking about this. Not you and I, but me and Livingston about the other tails for those that make it do really crazy things. So sooner than later on that. Got your next level shades. Thank you. I got so many cool emails this week about next level shades, you know.
Yeah, I tried them out too. Got on the ice the other day, did Jason, a little promo.
You sent me a pic the other day. It's a cool guy.
I sent one to Jody, and I predicted the response. I can't repeat it over the air. But,
which is, folks, I'm not the nicest guy. I'm not. I put it on. I put the smile on, but I will tear you a new one. Old Jay, the cool guy. We play rough in my household, so.
That's right.
Anyway, working on that, working on some other stuff. So we're almost there, Jay. Uh-huh. Almost there. It's ticky, 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 ticky. We're getting there. So anyway, Jay's been hyping me up for a hot minute about Savage Gear baits. You've been DMing and MDing and whatever you kids do on the gram of Insta and whatnot. With Mads from Savage Gear. Talk about what they've got going on. And guys, I think I've got the audio as best as I can. What's nuts? Mads is from Sweden originally?
He lived Denmark?
Denmark. He lives in Thailand. And I get him on the phone tonight. He's in freaking China.
Yeah.
He's not playing, right?
We've been DNM for months about stuff.
You've been playing Dungeons and Dragons via Instagram,
been trying to help them with any kind of recommendations on color lineup and stuff for their new lineup for their Musky release, which is coming this summer. It's really exciting, cool stuff, I'm telling you.
Yeah, they got some cool stuff, and Jay was talking about the versatility. I talked to Mads about it, but you know, I've always liked, and you've heard me advocate for the Alienial. Yeah, I like the bang for the buck, and I've caught a lot of fish on them freaking suckers over the years. They look great. So the Alienial, they got a lot of different cool stuff. Obviously, my best friend Tim, other best friend Jay's one of the two people I like. truth, sorry. I like two people, Jay and Tim. But anywho, Tim is like, when he got to the United States, he's all like about Weston, right? And Savage Gear. But there's some Savage Gear stuff he's shown me. And we're like, oh, that works. Bring it on. Mm-hmm. Right. So something from those Euro pikers. When you're catching 50-inch pike in fjords, get on the fjord. Jay, my yard's a fjord right now, Jay, by the way.
Is it? Okay.
Oh, it's gnar dog out there. It's been pouring for 48 hours, you know. It's you know, nothing. What says musky success? Like muddy water and flooding. So,
I guess it's early spring for you, really. Oh,
no.
Early spring.
It is ridiculoso is what it is. I don't even know what's going on. You just go, all right, we hooked him. Don't lose him. I'm getting the bites. That's one thing I'll say. For southern anglers, I'm getting the bites. Every time I go out, getting a bite. They're hitting soft. They're hitting goofy. They're like, right? And they come
That's
in.
The sound you make when they hit.
No, I just go.
No,
please don't mess this up internally.
please don't lose them.
For the love of God,
keep pushing.
I pray. Don't. No. Don't do that. Right. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. Please don't do that. Right. Mm-hmm. Please set the hook hard. it's just been goofy. Patterns. Meh. What's that? Just throw where you think they are. And it's been a game of where bait fish are staged. Active bait fish mean act of muskies in my world right now, but you know, was talking to Maz, who's fished obviously all over the place. When you're looking for snakeheads in China, you've done a bit of fishing, right? When you're like, this excites me. He's desensitized. He's done it all. He's been there, done that.
He is a serious world traveler.
Oh yeah, and
always on the water, always experimenting, always coming up with something.
It's like you think about like say Savage Gear, and I'm not shilling for him or anything like that, but you know, when I go to Europe, we were talking about FTX. By the way, Jay, big announcement. Guess who's going back to Hungary this year? Your boy, okay. Steve.
When's that?
It's in the fall. Titan Jr. was nominated for a thing. Well, the Kraken was nominated over there already.
But so is that not ICAST, but it's that big show that it's the same thing you went to? They got it scheduled in the fall now?
Yeah, it's ICAST of Europe.
Okay.
Which is like there's ICAST and there's FTX, and that's basically from England to China. You know, not a large landmass, really. It's the size of Rhode Island. So nominated for Hard Bait of the Year on the Kraken. So, and that's done by like a board of, I don't know what they do. Who knows? Who cares? Bunch of European men to get together and go, we could have won the war of 1855, had we? But I like this bait. I don't care what they do.
If we only had a Kraken, we would have done better.
Jay knows the truth. I'm going back to driving another Ferrari. I don't know if I told you the truth last time we talked about, but guess who drove a Ferrari in Hungary? That'd be me.
Was it a red Ferrari?
No. You know what it was.
Yellow?
This freaking guy had enough money. He painted a Ferrari, and that was the Tennessee. Remember the where are you from? I said Tennessee Jack Daniels. And that,
yeah,
we'll go. We've talked about that off quote unquote camera, if you will. Not anything I'm willing to talk about on record. His family's into cheese, Jay. And I think more on the Parmesan side, less than the Sargento side, right?
Okay. Yeah,
just a guy in his mid-20s with a blue, electric blue Ferrari. We were literally going door to door just handing out Bible pamphlets. Nothing okay. nefarious happened. Anyway, so gonna be back in Hungary.
It was my favorite story of all time. Steve walks into a bar and it's filled with rough and tough Euros, and you hear the records get and their heads spin around and look at him, and they go, "Son, where are you from?" And Steve goes,
"Tennessee,
Jack Daniels."
And I said, "Jack Daniels,
let me buy you one.
Tennessee." Oh, buddy, I made more.
Get over here.
I made more friends than a four-headed weasel. You walk into some freaking Eastern Europe country wearing freaking a pair of cowboy boots. On the boat, I wear Vans or Chucks. Right,
cowboy boots and a mesh Speedo.
You've been out with me. It's cowboy boots and a mesh Speedo every day. Yep. I Wrangler. I pay them a lot of money for that mesh Wrangler Speedo. But that's just who I am. I wear some freaking shit kickers and a button down snap down shirt. So when it's on 14 Pepsis in, you can't see the bloat. Right, so. I go rocket into there, and I'm about 17 Pepsis in before I walk in there, and the head record scratch. Everybody sitting in that place looks like a bad guy from Rambo 3.
Yeah. I'm drawing this conclusion already many times.
There's not a dude in there without a burr haircut that couldn't bash my head in. I go, I might be in the wrong place, boys.
Oops.
Just walked into that one, son. And I go, where are you from? They don't say it that well.
They don't say it that way, though.
No, they don't say it that way. But God, I don't like the Pepsi Brown. Not my thing. All right. I might fight a possum in my driveway if I had more of that ever in my life. And, but buddy, I copped to it real fast. It saved me the freaking ass beating of a lifetime one time. Jack Daniels of Lynchburg, I owe you for my teeth. So, I made a lot of friends and influenced people, but no, going back over for that, I'm super honored. Nominated for Bait of the Year in Europe. Who cares? We'll see what it does over there, but whatever.
Yeah.
It's plastic with a rubber skirt, folks. Revolutionary. Jesus, who cares?
I made a bait.
Sorry.
Bait makers unite.
No, I'm an idiot. But I get to get over there and have some Hungarian food. But I sort of pick on Mads a little bit about the difference between pike. You got to realize Mads' English is great. He's in China. I'm in Tennessee. So if you hear a little delay or anything like that, I apologize. I got the audio, I think, pretty good.
Okay. Right?
But it's awesome to hear from somebody that sort of has a different perspective. He loves the Herbex. He loves Julian and Andy Myers, which Julian is a super cool dude. If you're ever thinking about going to Eagle Lake in Ontario, that's the only person to call. So I'll let it roll and let it speak for itself, Jay. What do you say?
Cool.
All right. All right, guys. I have Mads from Savage Gear. Mads, we have been trying to get a hold of you for weeks. You're in East Asia right now. You fish just absolutely everywhere.
Yeah. If there's water, I
want to
fish.
If there's water, he's going to fish. So, you know, as far as Savage Gear products, it's absolutely amazing. They're doing some fantastic things here as of late. You know, it's no surprise. I've been a huge fan of Alien Eel for a lot of years and a lot of different Savage Gear products. What's going on with you guys right now for the muskie market? Jay was telling me there's some big things happening right now with bucktails. What's going on with Savage Gear?
Yeah, I think this is the start of something pretty big. I got a new friend. Actually, I got a few new friends last year. You know, I've always wanted to learn about the muskie fishing and really understand, you know, this crazy fever you get in your body. Why is it so exciting to fish for such an elusive and sometimes very weird acting fish?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I've been in two times I fished. At Lake Roden, and I met on last year's trip, I met this fantastic guy, Danny Herbeck, at Eagle Lake.
Danny and Steve.
And Danny Herbeck, and he has been on our Savage Gear Pro Staff team for some years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a pretty good lineup of products for the general predator fishing and also some products especially designed for muskie. But personally, I've never really gotten into depth with the muskie fishing. So this was my opportunity to get in depth with what's the difference between these muskies and the northern pike, and the difference between the different regional muskies, you know, the way they behave and all of that. So I spent a good 3 weeks last fall, September, October, with Danny and with Chris Alexanders from Alexanders at Roden, a great little place they have up there. And that's how this project really got me to mean something more than just another video. This is really a, shall we say, that gave me all the inspiration and all the insight on how to do this.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously you hung out with Steve, you hung out with Danny, Julian that owns Andy Myers, one of my favorite people on planet Earth. What a great lodge. I know you guys, I actually talked to Herbeck about what you guys were running. I think some of the burbots down deep and some of these things where one of my best friends, Mads, we haven't had a chance to talk before this. I'm headed to the Netherlands here in a few weeks, right? So I'm going to a couple bodies of water in the Netherlands. We're targeting those big, you know, 150 centimeter pike on some of these bodies of water where we're swinging for the fences. Savage Gear really stands out in that capacity, where I've always been a massive fan of the Alien Eel, the smaller Alien Eel, and some of the stuff you guys are doing. But it's really cool because Jay was telling me you guys are getting the bucktail game, some different things, where what's cool with Savage Gear is you guys are worldwide, right? It's predatory game fish, because you guys understand pike, you understand muskies. So, you know, what are some of the innovations coming out for you guys in 2024? What makes it stand out? Because other than price point, I think one of the best things about Savage Gear is the price point. It's not a billion euros or $1 billion to get a bait that's really well thought out. You know, you guys have some serious innovations coming out with bucktails. What's going on with your bucktail lineup? What are you guys thinking?
Well, kind of funny the way that you kind of started this, with us being international. Right now, I'm sitting in a bass boat in the northern Thailand fishing with two of the most avid Japanese fishermen I fish with. And they're both, as we're talking right now, you can probably hear the bass baits going. So we're fishing after the Asian muskie, the giant snakehead, which is a lot the same as the muskie. It's like from Sirius Hill. You know, like a sucky, you got to get everything right and hit the fish and land it. And it's that's that international, shall we say, environment where Savage Gear has most of its innovation and all this come from. And as you mentioned, that you know, the price point is important. It doesn't cost more to make a good quality bait. It costs more in development and making sure that the mass production is run smoothly. Mm-hmm. But I've seen that I spend a lot of my time on in our factories here in Southeast Asia. We have a pretty big international network, so I learn a lot from working with many different nationalities, both Chinese and the Japanese and the Americans. And I'm privileged to be with some of the best people in the industry on a weekly basis. So I guess that's one of the secrets that we have, is that our network is so big. On the boat right now is the owner of SCG Marine.
Yes.
So yeah, he has the biggest single boat dealership, the best boats in America.
Yeah.
A boat world in Texas.
Yep.
He started that. And then he has SCG Marine in Japan.
Yes.
And the other guy's actually the MD for Gamakatsu. Interesting. So even though we're competitors, we're so close enough that we can be in the same boat and have fun.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting for me, because like last year, all the podcasters now went, you know, FTEX, the European fishing show. I went there and it's like, you know, I work with Livingston Lures and we go to FTEX and it's just like, people are talking about Savage Gear. You guys are so big in Europe where, you know, some of the, whether it be the what I find interesting about European baits is like the realism of them, right? So you do the 3D burbot, you do some of these 3D scans, you do the 3D sucker, where you guys are pushing the boundaries of what's been done. You know, so from your international experience, like with the bucktail market you're getting into and things of this nature, I mean, that sort of opens up Europe to Savage Gear, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and that's what you're going to see. And that's why the blades, we call them Savage Blades, this is why that this is a very important introduction. It's kind of our signature within the meal making, I should say. Realism and these extra details have always been my kind of hobby in the hobby. You know, I go to extremes to make something look real or have a function that is not already there.
Right.
Some of the early lures, of course, may look somewhat crude. You mentioned the Alien Eels a lot of times, and of course, that's heavily inspired by the famous bulldog. But what you could see is that I added the side pins and completely changed the balance and the action of the bait.
Right.
So that small difference in the harness. But with the realism and the way that we're approaching the blades, where we also really listen very carefully to the muskie anglers' need for the practicality, the durability, the castability to be able to work these blades a full day.
Yeah.
And then you add to that some stunning colors and some details that haven't been seen in the muskie world before. I think it's going to be interesting to see what.
Yeah. I was super excited. So Jay was explaining kind of the versatile weighting on your blades, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been doing this podcast forever, you know, and my clients that start tomorrow, Mads, are from Poland, right? They're flying over. They're fishing for muskies for the first time ever from Poland from the podcast, right?
Yeah.
And we talk about versatility, that transposition from muskie to pike. It's all ESOCs, right? Chain pickerel, the whole bit. Until we get into Russia with the Amur pike and nobody's ever been over there. But at that point, it's versatility where Jay's saying that variable weighting on your bait with the new Savage Gear Bucktail, you can change that out all the time, which is super cool to me, where you go, okay, you don't need 14, 15 different bucktails. You have a Savage Gear Bucktail where it's going to run deeper, shallower, whatever the conditions are telling you to do.
Yeah, I think this kind of fishing, what is different from pike fishing when you fish muskie, is that the function must be there in a way that you can fish a whole day, because you need to have endurance and protection in every cast for a full day.
Yes.
Sometimes you get lucky and you get a muskie right away, but very often you have to work your ass off to get these fish. First of all, you got to raise them. Uh-huh. Then you got to make sure that you can get them to commit in a figure eight if they go all the way to the boat.
Right.
Then you got to make sure that, you know, your blade starts spinning right away.
Right.
You can cast into that slight headwind. You can, if you want to for a little while, you can fish the shorter cast along the drop offs and the overhangs. So that's why this versatility that you can change the weight. It comes in very handy.
Mm-hmm.
And I also believe that the sizes we made are different, because first of all, we're not using a Colorado or Indiana blade. I drew up this blade more or less by coincidence. So uh-huh. The blade is not the same shape as all the other blades on the muskie market. You will see that. And the sizes are not either, so they're actually off sizes. They're not a 7 to 8 to 9 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
So 12.5, 8.5, 9.5, and 10.5. So
right, filling a gap.
All pretty
yep.
size. Yeah. So, and then the collapsibility, you know, the fact that you need a relatively good lively stroke but still be able to cast it
mm-hmm.
easy and far into the wind. So work a lot with that. We actually also made some innovation on the way we cut the scopes.
Yep.
So our range covers everything from the 7.5 and all the way up to a 10.5, both singles and doubles. And each skirts has different lengths and different constructions
mm-hmm.
to make sure that the vortex from the blades actually picked up in the skirts and making them swim. So
right.
you're going to be a little surprised when you see them in the water. They almost look like they're jointed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. It just makes them. I've seen them. They come to life. It's very cool. So, you know, as far as your crossover appeal from Europe to North America for Canada and the United States, you know, muskies and pike are cousins. They're very close to one another, right? What are some of the baits that you've seen really excel in Europe that have not translated to North America, like the 3D burbot or the line through trout? Or what are the baits you're going, these are some of the best baits we make that people in North America need to be paying attention to?
Yeah. I was a little bit of the belief that if I made the lures look super realistic and make everything swim perfect, you would also be able to lure the muskie.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I was a little bit too cocky that I thought, okay, 16-inch 9-3-30 trout in a sucker pattern. It's going to be absolutely annihilated in it. Yeah, and everything in crack. But the truth is that the muskie is not a pike. The muskie is a completely different animal. And I believe that the muskie has a far more advanced and better sideline system and probably also somewhat more moody. So they really react to new faces, you know, the minors and the majors. And it's very obvious to me that they are often a reaction strike animal. So that means you can provoke them to a strike or you can trigger certain sensors within them that will take them into that mode. But even though they know shit is wrong, they will still bite.
Right.
It's one of the only things that I know that reacts so strongly to that figure eight.
Yeah.
The fact that they're so dialed in on the bait, they are like an inch behind the bait, they don't bite it until they realize that the thing might get away.
Right. So it's a little bit like the cat thing.
Yeah, so it's a little bit like the cat playing with a mouse. That's what I find so fascinating. The pike, there's always something I can adjust. The sink rate, the way the bait glides, even adding some scent to the lure, colors, they can be completely reactive to one color on a day that can be the difference between silverfish and pinfish. So the pike, there's so many things I can do as a lure designer or an angler to lure the pike. With muskie, it's the other way around. The muskie decides how to lure the angler.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the most important things for muskie angler, in my opinion, now having fished them, I can say, for, you know, at least some $1,000, is that perseverance and self-confidence when you fish muskie is so important.
Absolutely, you have to stick
with it. You have to grind.
Yeah. And
there's no easy way. You cannot sit and adjust your ears, your tungsten spikes, and add feathers to the hook, and make the perfect cast presentation that you would win with on a big bass or a big pike. You simply have to grind.
Absolutely.
Well, and then
go right ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, and that's what I find so fascinating is that it's a little bit the same with this other type of fishing I'm doing right now, where we fish with these giant snakeheads, elusive fish that are reacting pretty much the same way. It is very interesting to kind of push the needle, and that's why I got so fascinated about this muskie fishing is because the traditional North American muskie fishing has a fantastic history. The legacy of that fishing, if you look at Danny's Beck, Seaford, if you look at some of the you know, the true legendary muskie fishermen that have helped develop and progress these crazy lure patterns, movement patterns, and way of fishing. I mean, the bucktail, who would have known that, you know, putting giant spinner blades and a big fluffy skirt moved in that special way would somehow trigger the muskie not just to one buck, but continuously be the most productive lure pattern for decades.
Yeah.
And the same with some of the topwater movement, like some of these thick whoppers and some of these sounds, it's like no other fish will react that frequently and repeatedly to that kind of pattern.
Right.
So it's years and years and years and years of grinding that have come made this technique what it is today.
Absolutely. Well, Mads, I know you're trying to catch a big fish right now. Thank you so much for being on the Muskie 360 podcast. We appreciate you having the time and making the time for us.
Listen, this was my pleasure. I really appreciate that you guys made this happen.
Absolutely.
And I look forward to contributing with anything we can in the future. And I can't wait to show you guys what we are planning to bring to the North American muskie fishermen.
Thank you so much. Jay, what do you think, bud? What a cool perspective on the difference between muskie, pike. I mean, angling experience Mads has. He's freaking somewhere in China we couldn't find on the map, fishing for snakehead.
Yeah, he sent me some videos before we were trying to get reach him on the phone and of where he is, and he sent me the boat shots and the pier and it's just this cool river and the mountains in the back. Oh my gosh. He said it's a really, really cool place. So I'm sure I'll hear what they did today.
Yeah, he knows what's going on. So it's nice to have that on. I love that we have those relationships here of, you know, as much as I love to talk to Goober Thompson, that, you know, doing whatever, somebody that is Mr. International going all over the place. Let's hit some Q&A here real quick.
Absolutely.
Todd! I'm fishing small clear creeks. Think mud river. So already thrown a small busky type baits. He's talking West Virginia. Downsized it in tight follows isn't an option. Water can be very clear and shallow. Figure eights are problematic. With that in the front of my mind, some figure eights question. If you could pick any lure to be on your line in a figure eight situation, what would it be? Have you found fish in pressure bodies of water more likely to follow baits? And do you think fishing pressure makes it harder to get a fish in a figure eight? Have you found water clarity to affect figure eights? Okay, cool. So, somebody I respect the crap of, Dr. Bob, right?
Sure.
Dr. Bob is no BS, and Dr. Bob fishes Metro Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Where there are more musky anglers per year than fish in the lake, according to DNR studies, right? Well, guess what? If your figure eight is not perfection, chef's kiss, mwah, you're not going to get a bite. They've seen it. They've done it. So pressured fish definitely will be turned off by some weird angle of approach or something that seems, I hate to say natural, but something that seems unnatural. But if you come at the wrong angle and you do a lazy J, that doesn't fly. That does not fly. So getting down, like, okay, you think you have a fish behind you, crouching, changing your shadow, changing your body position, can play, driving their head deep. Something I've thought about actually with Dr. Bob is like, Joe Bucher is the king of driving a fish deep in the first corner of a figure eight. Well, he's not looking up. He has no clue. So in truly pressured water, how we deliver our figure eight can be immensely important. So best bait to figure eight, right? I'm sorry, my office chair, Jay, it's falling apart.
I don't know. Well, sorry to hear that.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, thanks, Office Depot.
Is it getting squeaky?
It's getting squeaky.
Oh boy. First sign of demise.
Folks, if whoever's working at the office chair outlet, call us. Hey, this is Steve.
We need the sponsors.
Right, right. Hey, this is Steve and this is Jay. And we're for Big Ricky's office chairs.
That's it. That's the only one we're bringing on.
My tush never goes numb.
That's the motto they live by.
Speaking of, I called Jay the other day, and this is a tangent. I heard you squeak, you squeaky little boy. Squeaky. We need an office chair deal.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah, we do.
We're begging. No.
Yeah.
Me and Jay have been approached. We got approached, oh goodness, like a week and a half ago. I even tell you this one. The funniest things have hit us up in recent times. You remember the one about the men, I can't say the name. They offered us a stupid amount of money for man grooming products.
Yes, a while back, yeah.
Can you imagine us doing the promo for shaving your neither regions?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think we could have a pretty good time with that actually. I don't know if they'd accept it.
But I could ride that horse till it dies.
They'd be like, okay, not the approach, the angle we're looking for, guys.
Folks, this is your old friend Beaver Shavers.
Oh boy.
Beaver baits. Shaving your, if you trim, anyway. You know where I'm going. Mm-hmm. And the other one hits me up is like some freaking energy drink. And you're like, no. We already have our own when we make fun of that. So sorry. Mm-hmm. Best figure eight lure. I think the lure class that figure eight's the best is a bucktail.
Sure.
Followed by a crankbait, right? Mm-hmm. Big rubber figure eights horribly.
Right? Well, it can be done, yes, it requires more.
You have to be engaged on every time round. And
sure.
You know, with the Kraken, I advise clients on the boat, like, leave 4 feet of line out and do kind of a deep, big oval to start if you see something. Where jerk baits, I mean, dive and rise baits figure eight like crap until the Titan came out, which is like, get it to the rod tip and treat it like a crankbait, right? And a lot of guys, that makes sense. The best figure eighting bait, because it's a linear path behind the rod tip, is a bucktail. Followed by crankbaits. Right? That would be my thought.
I agree.
You know, topwater's not bad. I'm an advocate for jamming a topwater subsurface. So anything that has a quote-unquote spin to it, this is going to be your easiest. If you're seeing a ton of fish come in on figure eights and can't convert, you know, you got to augment that. We've been there, done that. Oh, what else did he say? Pressure fish, more likely to follow baits than you think of fishing pressure. Yeah, fishing pressure, just to reiterate, he said, does fishing pressure make it harder to get a fish commit in a figure eight? Absolutely. If they've been caught 4 times in their life in a figure eight, they're going, whoa, no bueno, right? No bueno. So if there's legitimate pressure, now he's saying the mud, like, pressure in the Northwoods, pressure in the Northwoods is pretty good, right? Manny chain, freaking
Eagle River chain,
and they still fall for dumb stuff. Three legs, you know,
sure.
Over to Chippewa flowage, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. I think the heaviest pressure is Metro Minnesota. I really do. Where
anglers per capita kind of situation.
Anglers per capita that know what's going on.
Yeah, and you're dealing with pretty clear water. And
Don't psych yourself out on pressure. Don't psych yourself out on pressure. You go, well, I've saw 4 boats today. That's not pressure. 14 boats in visual range is pressure, right? Oh, you know, there's Cliff Knutson, there's the Steinmarks and the whatever. Pressure is relative, I think, to population size. So it's something to consider. So I'm not saying you don't have pressure. I'm saying don't get psyched out by it until it's egregious, right? Jay and I've talked about it. How many times we get on a lake and I look at another boat and I go, I'm timing his cast, Jay. You've seen me do it.
Sure.
Well, somebody just went through that. Well, yeah, I'm looking at my wristwatch going, okay. He covered that in about 6 minutes. His casts are, 45 yards apart. Forget about him. That's not pressure. So consider that as far as volume. Depending on where you're at, you can have high volume, low volume. Make a reasonable assessment of what is pressure for the fish volume in that body of water. Tommy D, what's up, guys? Question about spring bait selection. I know the consensus among muskie anglers is bigger baits in the fall and winter, smaller baits in the spring. But when do muskies decide to stop eating bigger baits, and why? Is the spawn the cutoff, or is something during the winter season? So, I've seen this. I think where he's going, right? Where we gorge, right, Jay? And we're talking about early ice out. We're talking about early spawns, right?
Yeah.
at a certain point, Jay, notoriously, we half a cured ham at Thanksgiving, right? He's rolling around in the floor. He's bloated like a pig. He makes a little bit of room, whatever. Go gets a deviled egg.
Ooh.
Ooh, I can fit one more. If there is a tremendous feeding window pre-spawn, what I will do, and if I'm just like shellacking them, and I'm kind of shellacking them right now, to be honest with you, where, okay, big rubber, boom, I know I'm going to get to eat. I'm thinking a tandem of something small and something big, where some of these fish are going, I'm there, right? There's a line where you go, I've had enough ham, I can make it to the spawn, but that deviled egg looks pretty good. So consider having a tandem going. If you get a follow of a big fish, throw back with something small pre-spawn. It's not conventional knowledge, but it works, right? 5-6 inches. You know, you're throwing a pounder and they come in like 4 or 5 inch fatty slammer minnow, something like that seems to really do the trick. Where they go, I'm not going to have any more ham, but that deviled egg looks pretty tasty. I can force it, right? Now, obviously, post-spawn, once they do their business, yeah, they're going to eat small things multitude of times, right? I've always thought this, and it just seems like year after year, it's this point, which is post-spawn, it's going to be tiny bucktails, tiny crankbaits, lipless crankbaits, or mag dogs and tubes or krakens, right? For some reason, they just get a pass. So you can find fish that'll eat both ways, right? But if you're getting follows pre-spawn, say you're in a place that doesn't have a closed season, a lot of places don't now, and you're going, okay, mag dog, pounder, whatever it is, a regular Medusa, you name it, right? You got the new freaking quad dog. They're falling up and they're just not going. Don't be afraid to downsize pre-spawn to something that's kind of a snack where you think, hey, they've put on as much egg weight as they can. They're kind of there. And it's a different headset, but I've seen it with having an open season where they go, you know what? Forget about it. I'll eat that. Why not? It was worth the effort. So, Steve.
Yeah, it works more often than not. Yeah.
Steve, I just got my Kraken. I'm excited to try it this season. What's the ideal setup to throw it, work it, reel speed, rod type? So, it's no working backwards. It is no surprise to anyone. I use the 9'6" shield rod. My daily thrower, like the thing I make a living with, is a 9'6" heavy. Again, Jay likes a 9-footer. Jim Stewart, mm-hmm. based on height, likes an 8'6", right? So, a rod proportionate to your body. What feels right for you? Can you do a really good figure eight with that? That's a question. Heavy action seems to be the best with the Kraken. We don't want to overwork that bait. Up, let's slack, fall. And the biggest thing I have with clients, I'm like, stop reeling. Stop, right? Pop it up. And when I'm trying to show that bait, it's sort of a tutorial, right? And what I'll do typically with somebody is I'll pull into a spot and say, okay, on this, we're going to throw X, Y, and Z. But let's say I'm on a deep edge or whatever in the winter, and we're going to throw Krakens. What I will do is I'll pull into that spot. I'm not throwing at a fish per se, but I will throw the bait and I'll pop it up and I'll go, my left hand reeler, because I'm stupid, but I'll hold it up away from there, up. And I'll go 1, 2, pull up the slack a little bit, pop, right? And so we're not reeling and popping at the same time ever. It's up about a 3-4 foot swing at most, typically a 2-foot swing. that bait jumps up way higher than you think it will. That's the point. Muskies hit on the fall, on big rubber, on tubes, on krakens, all this stuff, jerk baits. So I do not want to be doing both at one time. You have to train yourself to allow that bait to do what it will do. So pull it up, hand is off the reel handle to train yourself. Then you reel up the slack. Herbeck said, point the bait, point your rod tip at the bait. You can do that, or you can just train yourself to go up, 1/1000, 2/1000. All right, reel a little bit, do it again. That's the best way I found for that bait. If you overwork it, you'll hate the results. The whole point is making it easy. And don't, the point of making something easy is to not like sit there and go bang, 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 bang all day long, right? Let the bait do the work. Ideal setup, you know, even in the cold months, 5/3 to 1, slow me down, 6/3 to 1 in the warmer months. That would be the ticket. That's the sound I make when I'm funneling through questions.
Mm-hmm, I realize.
You know, working on it here. Oh, goodness. Stellar Feller, right?
That's his name?
Well, that's what he says it is. Okay. When is the best time to target the Northwoods for muskies? I'm new to the sport. I've cut a couple, but I want to pad my numbers. Jay, what do you think the best time in the Northwoods is?
Hard to say. It's dependent on the year. You know, the last 2 years we've had late ice out, and ice out goes out, you know, sometime around early May the last couple of years, which is a little late. And it affected the summer fishing for sure and the spring fishing. But if it's a normal year, June can be great. It can be action packed. You know, you can have some hot and heavy results. But September is an excellent month. We call that kind of a pre-turnover thing, where lakes are finally starting to cool down a little bit after a hot summer, which is predicted. And it all depends on what you're looking for. I mean, trophy time, you know, that is going to be your post-turnover, and that's well into October and November. But in terms of action, putting fish in the boat, seeing a lot of fish, on a typical good year, June can be great.
Yeah,
and season doesn't open for us until Memorial Day. It's late May, so
June,
the southern part of
first
Wisconsin,
part of July,
August
is nasty sometimes.
Could be.
You get the scum, you get the freaking pea soup on some of these bodies of water.
Yeah, some lakes the weeds are dying off, and you get that early that's when the algae bloom kicks in August 1st on some of the mid sized lakes around here, because you get part of the weed die off and they all bloom up, and all of a sudden your lake clarity might have gone from 4 feet to 4 inches.
So Cam, looking like open water soon here in Northern Illinois, Southern Wisconsin.
Cool.
Yeah, it's coming.
Yeah.
First year targeting muskies in Illinois right after ice out. They have Ben told me they don't have a closed season. Right. So if the water opens up, let them fly.
I believe
what,
so.
What do you do? Don't go get a ticket and blame us. Look it up yourself. I'm not your mother, but I believe it to be factual. What are you doing to find and catch fish during cold water ice out pre-spawn? Back to what I just said, big rubber and a small follow up. That would be my ticket, right? Are we looking for a Donkey Kong meal or a snack, right? That's something to consider for sure. It's one of those deals where you let the conditions, let the fish tell you the story, right? But depending on where we're at pre-spawn, you know, what are your water temps? 43 and 49 are way different, right? 50 and 55 are way different. Pay attention to water temperatures. The colder it is, the deeper, more breaking areas I'm focusing on. The warmer it is, I'm looking for pre-spawn fish. And some of these pre-spawn fish, I'm just telling you, they don't want a Donkey Kong meal. They might be picking off bluegill or small minnows just to maintain, right? So there's the quote-unquote feed bag period, and there's like, meh, maintain. Jack, glider colors. Do you feel that gliders are a bait that needs a bit more realistic look to them, being that they are generally used in colder water or when fish are more finicky? They get a better look at them. What do you think? No. I don't think it plays. So my best glider right now is one I came up with. It is puke green with an orange belly. Right? And before that was a white warlock. Gliders, if used appropriately in quote-unquote bad conditions, need to run deep. Right. If a fish is on hot on the trail of a glide bait, what you need to throw back is, say, a shallow invader, or a mid. By mid, I mean 4, 5, 3, mm-hmm. 3 to 6 crank.
Yeah.
If they're coming up on those, you need to be on cranks and twitching. With gliders, I want to present an absolutely blatant target. We've talked about this before. If you've not heard it, if you're new to the podcast, whatever. Let me give you my 2 cents, Jay. Disruptive camouflage. If you're a hunter, if you've heard of this, I apologize. When you go deer hunting, deert, right? Some states require that you wear your orange vest or whatever, but you don't do that for turkeys, which are semi-visual or whatever. The more disruption in a pattern of something you have, the less of an articulated profile it has. Bait fish intentionally are masked in the water column. I want to stand out like a sore thumb. Here I am, I'm dumb, eat me. Here I am, I'm dumb, eat me. Black, white, or just vulgar colors that go, here I am. I'm not looking for heavy detail. And I fell down that rabbit hole before, right? Here's these artisan gliders that are just freaking amazing. Give me something that stands out, has a hard profile. So if you're quote-unquote negative or neutral on a cold front, and you feel it, but you look up and you don't see anything, it's disruptive, right? The natural tendency, let's just say a crappie. Crappie is silver with black spots, right? Guess what that is? It's disruptive. The spots break up the profile. I want to stand out like a sore freaking thumb. That would be my take. Anyway, Jeff.
Yeah.
Yes. So asking about the next, lure. I actually have the next lure. We're not going to talk about that. I'm working on that, right? Got something in the works. Shannon, just wondering if you use backing on your reel before putting line on it. If so, what is the reasoning and what do you use for backing? So, for a typical musky angler, right? You go, of course we use backing. Jay, there's a lot of reels now that I'm seeing, right, that have a hard anchor point or a pass-through on the spool. So,
yeah,
the capstan from Cast King or some of these reels have like an anchor point. Backing is old school. And the methodology or the reasoning was this, right? We needed something that would grab the braid so it didn't slip. So we got to set the hook and the braid doesn't slip around this metallic spool. It had something to quote-unquote dig into.
Mm-hmm.
There are reels, like I said, you tie to the spool. It's got a little pass-through. You can tie a blood knot. You can tie a nasty knot. I don't care what knot you tie. When it's that deep in the spool, who cares, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to slip. It has a terminating point where the braid is compressed to that point, and it's not going anywhere. You'll set the hook. Back in the day when we all started, we have a Calcutta or, say, an Abu Garcia 6501 or 6500. 6501 is a lefty. That's what I said that. But 6,500 or 5,500, that spool was slicker than snot. You would put backing with electrical tape or duct tape on it, and then you would tie a fusion knot on it. There's no knot called a fusion, but some a blood knot, whatever knot, between the backing and the braid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that would allow that braid to have something to dig into, because the monofilament, which is typically used, which is taped down, and correct me if I'm wrong, at the line changing station at the Muskie shop, guess what's hanging right there? Electrical tape, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if they're on an anchor point, they put electrical tape on it, then they put monofilament over it, and then they put braid on. Some of these modern rails, like I said, they have that pass-through. We could tie straight to it and it won't go anywhere. Where I'm at, I always use backing. Always. So I have a spool of, let me pull it down. I think
next level braid.
No. Next level backing. I think I did this one more one time, right? This freaking thing is older than sin. Manufactured by Maxim Company, right? Manel, Germany. It's different. It's East Germany, Jay.
East German?
This okay. This is older than the Berlin Wall, everybody. And it is home. The label's a little bit miffed now. 0.6 millimeters is it, which is about a 10-pound test, 12-pound test. I've been using this backing. My father used this backing. If I had a kid, he could use this backing. It's never ending, right? It's just like this spool. It's a generational spool of 10, 12-pound test. Backing doesn't matter. You could put whatever you want. What I'm trying to do is increase my spool diameter to save braided line.
Yeah. You got to look at the economics. You don't want to throw line away. If you don't, you're never going to get down to.
You're never going to see it. Never. I've got those. And I love the reel, the TW and the Pro-Rex, right? You're a Pro-Rex fan. Die will hook me up with a couple through the Muskie shop. And they have that T-bar on. They cast like a rocket ship, right? I need to check my licenses, because I could probably cast a bait to North Carolina if I had enough line, right? It just zips out. But from a full spool, it still doesn't do that. It won't, like, I sort of run 3/4 in the winter, and I can see backing. It's not going to happen. That's not realistic. That's me showing out, like, oh, let me see how far I can cast. Realistically, I want about 1/4 of the spool backing, and I'll put braid over top of it, right? Save yourself the line, hence the next level braid, where I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. The braid industrial complex wants you to spend $400 on braid, right? Where you can get a superior braid for cheaper. Don't waste it. It's never going to see the water. It's never going to get wet. You know, how many times I've unspooled a reel and go, okay, I get 1/4, 3/4 of the way down, somewhere in between, and it's brand new line that's still putting collar on my fingers, right? Don't waste it. Put 1/4 of your spool into backing, then tie. If you don't know a good knot, tie a lot, right? And then put braid over top of it. That's my methodology. I've never once, ever, in my entire time of fishing these things, thousands of muskies in the net, have I seen a muskie take me to the backing? Doesn't happen. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure somebody, well, he ran us like this. I don't care. Until it happens to me, whatever, dude. Right? You can get away with at least 1/4, if not a smidge more, of backing, which will save you a tremendous amount of braided line. The other thing I'll say is this. Let's say you're like, okay, I got braided line. I've said it before. Get you something to unspool it. Put the old end on the freaking backing. Like, reverse it. If you want to get the best life for your line, theoretically, you could spool a reel up, fish an entire season, take it off, keep it from getting all kinked up, and put the end you've used on the backing and reverse it, and the unused end will be fresh for the next year.
Sure.
So most people won't do that because they're going, as somebody that spent plenty of years without working for the Muskie Shop, Jay, right? Or not working for, but working with, and working with all these companies where, holy crap, hooks, split rings, and line are probably my biggest expense outside of gas. Right? Line is expensive. How do I get the most out of this? I notoriously would take casting reels, reverse them onto my trolling reels. That's what I did. Like, okay, that's looking ratty. Let's cut off the ratty part and put it on my trolling reels. Right? So it's fresh line for the first 100 yards. It's never seen water. And I'm pretty good. You know, 100 yards, I've never seen a muskie peel off 100 yards. I'm sorry. Doesn't happen. So that's what I consider. So backing's important for me with the modern reels now that have the spool tie off or whatever. I still use backing. Why not? Why waste the braided line? Save yourself, you know, you buy a spool and next little braid and you go, you fill the whole thing up with that stuff from the tie off to the top. You're never going to use it. Put monofilament on it. 10-12 pound test seems to work the best. Back in the day, I had some of that 30 pound green. What was that? Big Game from Berkeley.
Sure.
That's a waste. 10-12. You know, if you get, I'll say this. There's some guy, I had one run me. Every inch of line I had, I got down to the backing. If a fish runs you to the backing, hold your rod tip up in the air and follow him on the trolling motor and pick it back up until the braid's on the spool. Ain't going to happen. Right? Muskies are sprinters, not marathoners.
Yep.
They're not going to do it. You know, I mean, I'm willing to be wrong. Don't get me wrong. Save yourself the money. Henceforth, save yourself the braid. That would be the smartest thing to do in my book. Jay?
Yes, Steve.
When did you get your rejection letter from the Naquabats?
Oh, that goes way back. You know, of course, I've never water skied. Yeah, I've never water skied, so I can see, I guess, why they turned me down. But you know,
identified it as an Aquabat, I think, is the problem, right?
Well, right.
If you feel it in your heart, you are, right? Jay was like, I'm a Aquabat. And they're like, no, you're not.
You've got to be a part of something, Steve.
You've got to be a part of something. Anyway, folks, say goodnight, Jay Bird.
Good night, guys. Thank you.
Later.
Watch me kill these big pike. Party in the gulag, party in the ranger.